This is ESPN New York Tonight. Here's Larry Hardesty and Gordon Damer.
Well, we got an interesting show lined up for you today. We'll talk a little hoops. We'll talk some baseball. And, of course, we'll talk TB themes next. At 1-800-919-3776. Also via Twitter, at Hardesty ESPN, at Gordon Damer, at ESPN NY 98_7 FM, along with Brian Mungia and Jake the Snake. We're here until midnight on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Gordon.
Larry, what's going on?
Gordon, can I tell you something?
Yes, please.
The Nets are boring. They just blow everybody out.
Yeah.
I mean, they're boring. This winning streak has been boring. It's been boring.
It's almost like the Yankees, those years, a few years back now, where, you know, during the regular, it was just a waiting game until you got to the postseason, right? You were just going to see how far they could get into the postseason, because the regular season, you knew they were going to be there. And you knew they were going to show up in the regular season. So, yeah, I can understand what you're saying. The Nets are pretty much automatic. But I go back to the same point that I've been making for about a week now. Man, just as well they got James Harden, right?
Yeah,
it seemed like
yeah.
overkill at the time. But considering all the time that KD has missed and Kyrie in and out of the lineup himself, I mean, he has been – and he's been fantastic. You know, for him to actually get some – I don't know if he'll get legitimate consideration for it at the end of the year – but to be even mentioned in the MVP talk for a team that he came in the middle of the season on tells you how great he's been.
He's been tremendous. And once again, it's unfair to him, but he's kind of written this book, Gordon.
Right.
This is great.
Absolutely.
We'll see him in the playoffs.
Right. I mean, same thing, right? We know you're great in the regular season.
Yeah. This is not the first time we've seen it. I mean, and you know what? It makes me look at Mike D'Antoni a little bit differently now, too. I mean, we criticized, James Harden, the beard, for all he does. He kills the game. Everybody's stopping. He's a one-man. He stops a one-man fast break because all he does is dribble and pound the ball and pound the ball into submission. And now we see him come with the Nets. He's Mr. Triple-Double on this team now.
I mean, he has to be close to average. I don't know. Is he averaging a triple-double
with
the
close.
Nets? He's got to be close. I mean, it seems like every single night. He's got 25 points or more. He's got usually 13, 14, 15 assists, and he usually comes pretty close to 10 rebounds as well. So tonight, I'm just pulling it up now. 29 points, 14 assists, 10 rebounds. There you go.
Yeah, that's it. Now, I got to tell you, I wonder how many of the Houston players were like, hey, James, what's up, man? Yo, good to see you again. Like, this dude right here. He gonna come down here. Yeah, he talked about us like we was nothing. Now he come down here. We done lost 12 in a row. Now we down 13 because of him. Yeah, some people running over to him. Hey, James, what's up, man?
It Everybody's is always like, strange yeah, when that happens, right? He's your buddy.
Yes. Yeah. You want to be boys now. How come you weren't boys? How come you're not down here suffering with us? He's like, I'm out.
So. You know what? Since he left, he wasn't wrong, right? Like he said,
no,
the
he
reason
wrong.
Why he wanted to leave, they weren't good enough to compete for a title. And they weren't with him, and they certainly are not without him.
They're not even close. They can't even win games without him. I mean, that's a heck of a losing streak. And listen, John Wall's not played badly for them. But still, they just don't have enough talent. So, you know, it's just that the Nets are I'm watching them, Gordon, and I'm like, I'm channel surfing. And I go back. Just keep going. And obviously, I was a little disappointed in the Knicks last night. But I'll tell you this, Gordon. When I heard that Derrick Rose was not going to play, I said, uh-oh.
Well, I had that sense of uh-oh. Just, I don't know what it is about the Knicks, but it feels like that there's this internal mechanism that whenever the optimism level gets too high, there's a shutoff. Somewhere inside that mechanism, you know, like when everybody's talking fourth in the Eastern Conference, they've won 7 of 10. How deep can they go in the playoffs? Is this the time to make a move? And you just see, you know, right. San Antonio was coming off the overtime loss the night before. You see, they're going to be tired. Knicks will be able to take advantage. And then you heard the Derrick. I felt like that even before the Derrick Rose news. But then when you heard Derrick Rose is out, you're like, uh-oh, this could be, you know, because even when they're winning games, they have to have things all lined up in the right way to win games. Now, more times than not, they have. But last night was one of the rare stinkers that they've really had this year. They weren't that good in the first half. And then, in the second half, the Spurs finally started hitting some shots, and it was pretty much over.
Yeah, it was. So, listen, We'll find out a lot about this team, as Walt Clyde Frazier says, they just can't stand prosperity, which is what you're saying.
Yeah.
So we'll see what they do tomorrow night. It would be nice for them to go into the break over 500. It would be. It would be really nice.
I will give them a pass on the Spurs game. It was not as competitive as I would have liked, but if you told me they lost that game, okay, fine. You can't lose to the Pistons.
Nope.
You cannot. I'm sorry. You cannot lose to the Pistons. You have to win that game. That's a can't. It might not be a must win because nothing happens if you win, but it's a can't lose. You cannot lose that game if you're the Knicks, especially after losing to the Spurs like you did.
Yeah, you just can't. You're right. You're absolutely right. So, you know, we'll talk about the Knicks a little bit later. We got some football to talk about later as well. But Gordon, I got to tell you something. I was a little shocked when I heard about Aaron Boone having surgery to get a pacemaker, but here's what shocked me more. He could be back in 5 days.
Yeah. You know, I've had some family members who have actually undergone that and are living with it and have lived with it. So it's not that surprising. I didn't know that it was that fast of a turnaround. The people in my family who have had them, you know, it was a few years ago now, so it was more a couple of weeks type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it is very alarming when you hear that news, right? He's taking an immediate leave of absence and needs a pacemaker. He's a young man. Now, apparently he had some sort of genetic heart defect or something like that, that actually, I don't remember this, that actually led to the conclusion, his baseball career, his playing career ending quicker than maybe it would have otherwise. I didn't remember that fact, but it looks like this is something that he's known about for quite some time, so all good things for him, and hopefully he is back before too long.
Well, the quote in the article is several days, not 5 days. I'm sorry,
right.
Several days. So
yeah,
I mean,
I would figure probably at least 10 days, right? A couple of weeks, right?
Yeah.
I don't.
There's no need to rush him back.
It does make you wonder, though, the grind of a baseball season,
yeah.
Right? Like, you know, I don't know. Is that something that could play a part? I know that they say that this is something that he knew that was going to have happen, but, you know, that is such a grind. And
it
especially, I would think, probably everywhere, but certainly much more so with the Yankees, right? Like, if it's the Royals, that you probably – I'm not saying that is an easy job, but I have to think the media responsibilities and all that stuff is easier.
Right.
So
sure.
I don't know what kind of grind that is for Aaron Boone, but hopefully all the best for him. And it seems like the fact that it's not like something that popped up out of the blue, that he knew that this was going to be the case at some point in his life.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, the Yankees won tonight, another one of those 7-inning games for you, Gordon. I know you're ecstatic about that.
Oh, I love it. Well, look, in spring training, I have no problem. Play 5 innings, play 4. I don't care what you do in spring training. It's the regular season that bothers me. But another Gary Sanchez home run.
That's it. He's back.
The Sanchez is back.
That's it. It's over, baby.
Yo, it's over.
This is it. We're good. We're good. And in just a second, we'll hear from Brian Cashman and get his thoughts on this. But I'm just curious, Gordon, Carlos Mendoza, the bench coach, what does that do? I'm just curious from a player standpoint, right? What does that do? Because he's the assistant coaches, the bench coaches, they're always the mediators, the liaisons, right? When you got an issue with the manager or the head coach, you go talk to the batting coach or the assistant coach. He's the guy, you know, he's the friend. And then he goes back to the head coach and he translates, you know, what the issues are. So now this guy is going to be in charge. And I remember a player, I won't name him, and there was a situation where an assistant coach became the head coach. And so I went to this player and I said to him, what do you think of now the assistant coach becoming the head coach? He said, he's the same guy that I used to talk to. I got no respect for him. He got no real power. He's just, you know, the guy that we used to talk to. They're not going to keep him here. So it's just like he's still the assistant. Well, I'm going to do what I want to do. I was like, oh, wow. I wasn't expecting that answer, Gordon.
Yeah. Look, I think that in this day and age with baseball, how often do we always say, you know, Aaron Boone, he's not really the one pulling the strings. It's all the front office. The job is collaborative, right? Even when Brian Cashman went to and they decided to move on from Girardi, they said that they wanted somebody who was going to be more collaborative in that position. So I'm assuming that, look, you want to get Aaron Boone back as soon as possible. I'm sure there is a difference between being the actual manager and just the acting manager. But I would think that in spring training, given how much of an influence the front office has and just what an organization is run like, I would think it's probably not that not that big a deal, right? Like, we'll look back, you know, when we get to June, will we even remember that,
no, probably
you
not.
Know, Carlos Mendoza was the acting manager for a couple of weeks in spring training? Probably not.
Unless Boone gets thrown out of a game.
Yeah, well, let's hope, you know, I mean, just it's a very strange thing to pop up, right? Like, it usually is. When you see somebody's taking a leave of absence for some reason, you know, pacemaker for a guy who's 47 years old is not the first thing that comes to mind. You know, I have to admit, when I first saw that, it was alarming, right? I mean, yeah. It is a very alarming thing to think about. But hopefully he's going to be okay, and I'm sure he's got the best doctors in the world. And,
oh, absolutely.
And they'll get this sorted out before too long.
Especially going when you hear that he's been suffering for the past 6 to 8 weeks. It's like, what? You should have taken care of this before. Gordon, you should have taken care, not, you know, chastising him or anything. But Gordon, honestly, he should have took care of this before even spring training started.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, I don't know. I would think that I would be putting this off as long as humanly possible, right? Like, the last thing that qualifies as heart surgery, right?
Absolutely.
I know it's not open heart surgery, but it's still, you know, they're connecting a device to your heart to regulate the heartbeat. So I would think you'd probably put that off as, you know, I'm such a hypochondriac. I saw his symptoms. I'm like, oh my God, do I have those? Is this something I'm going to need now? So that's the way I look at it all the time. But hopefully he's going to be fine. And it seems like from all the people saying it, you know, it's certainly a shock, but it seems like it is, maybe it's more routine than at first seems like at first blush, right? More people have these type of things now than maybe 20 years ago or so.
Yeah, and they took him right away. It was like, okay, you're going right now, like now. Let's get this done.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to use the term "they took him right away." I don't know. You know, that's not his time. It's not the type of term. I don't know if you want to be using that one, but hopefully he's gonna, you know, get in there and get back as soon as possible. You know, the fact that they're mentioning you know, it's going to be this short of a turnaround. I mean, that is also kind of surprising, right? I mean, you know, get a pacemaker, be back on the bench for Yankees Tigers 7-inning games, a little split squad action against the Marlins. I don't know, Aaron. Take a couple of weeks. I mean, you know, take your time.
What's the rush?
Right. We don't need to see Corey Kluber throw 2 innings. You know.
Well, maybe he. Well, I'm sure he needed it. He'll get the video.
I'm sure they'll be beaming it right to the iPad in the room, right?
That's it. 1-800-919-3776. We'll hear from Brian Cashman on Aaron Boone, and also we'll talk to you a little football. Gordon, there's a receiver that used to be in blue, who's now looking for a job. And I wonder, obviously, we talk finances, but I wonder if also his disappearance for a game or two during the season had anything to do with him being shown the door over at MetLife Stadium. So we'll talk about that. Also, Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh spoke to the media today. And Joe Douglas said something, Gordon, that some Jet fans will find disturbing and other Jet fans will find ecstatic.
You know, I really applaud him for, you know, being open with, you know, our fans through the press and just, you know, making everybody aware. It was a decision he didn't have to make, but he chose to, you know, to be very open and share what he's going through and not to put, you know, his players or the team in a position of trying to, you know, no comment their way of why he's missing some games. And he just, he was so comfortable with, you know, what he's going to be going through here this afternoon that he was like, no, let's, you know, go ahead and share.
Brian Cashman on Aaron Boone being open about his situation going into surgery to get a pacemaker. It's ESPN New York Tonight here on 98.7 ESPN, 1-800-919-3776. Gordon, Brian Cashman also weighed in on Boone's time frame for return.
The time frame, as I know, it could be as early as 48 to 72 hours, and if it takes later, so be it. You know, I just think, you know, I got a lot of the feedback from Aaron Boone than I do, like everybody, I'm sure, including yourselves, do. You go online, you Google search, you watch the videos of how the procedure works and how people, you know, what goes on. And it's incredible, the abilities these the doctors have created over the course of time to deal with problems that people have. And so I watched a 10-minute video about the procedure and then how people come through the procedure and, you know, things that they might be dealing with in the short term. But it was rather remarkable. And yeah, they described 24 hours. People are, you know, it's an outpatient situation. And within 24 hours, people kind of return to normal.
That's amazing. So what do you think the recovery is going to be, Cash?
All we care about is making sure he's in a good place first and foremost, that he's healthy, that the pacemaker is working properly, and that's what the doctors will dictate and determine. And then obviously then you got to go through the intake testing and the COVID protocols and, you know, the return to play protocols, so to speak, even though he's a manager, and whatever is best, and how, you know, they hand him back off to us. And when it's the time is right, you know, we'll be ready. It sounds like it's going to be a short-term thing. That's certainly everybody's expectations, and we look forward to getting them back.
And Brian Cashman with the situation on Aaron Boone. And once again, Gord, it sounds like, once again, for me, while you think of it as being really serious, they make it sound like it's just routine. And he'll be back in a couple of days, and we'll go. Not that they're rushing him back, but he'll be back, and, you know, it's on his time frame.
I wonder how much of a... You know, everybody's feelings and thoughts are fairly the same, right? Like, you wish him the best and hope he gets back soon and all these. I wonder how long that good feeling will last, right? Like, does that make it to opening day? Does that make it to week two of the season before, you know, people are calling up yelling and screaming about Aaron Boone? Probably not. But, yeah, hopefully he gets through this quickly and is able to get back on the bench. But I would say, you know what, if you need an extra week, now is the time to take the extra week, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, that's in the hands of his players, Gordon. If they come out well, he'll be smelling like, oh, I love Aaron Boone. What a great job he's done. Listen, I know how good Aaron Boone is. He's like, he wins 100 games every year. He's been manager. We're great. We love him. And then when we get to the postseason, Gordon, it's all right. Yeah, he just can't manage worth a lick.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it'll be long forgotten about by the time October gets around here, right? I mean, that'll – You don't get any passes for hospital stays when the rubber hits the road of the postseason.
No, not at all, not at all. So once again, the Yankees win tonight, as you mentioned, Gordon. Gary Sanchez.
The Sanchez, yeah, he's back, baby.
Goes deep again. I'm telling you,
it's not. Is it too early to start voting for the All-Star game?
Never.
Are the ballots out yet? Can I go somewhere online?
You can go wherever you need to go and make sure that we put him in there. Let's go. Let's get it done.
Well, look, I mean, if he were struggling right now,
we would kill him.
I mean, we might not yet, but it would certainly, if he went three games and didn't get too many hits, it would be brought up.
Yes.
It would
absolutely
be brought up.
Absolutely. And listen, I'm happy he's making contact, because how many times did we see him not make contact last year?
Yeah, he just looked lost at the plate. He was just terrible. You know, and it's funny because with Yankee fans, anytime that he would hit, you know, do something, hit a home run, have a double, something, oh, you know, people online, they're always, oh, well, see that Yankee, that slander about Gary Sanchez. Oh, that slander. It's not slander if it's true. I mean, he was stunk last year. He was terrible.
Brutal.
You know, I'm all for, I root as much for the Yankees as anybody out there. But you got to be honest. When he's terrible, he's terrible. When a player is terrible, they're terrible. You know, people didn't say back in the day, you know, Ed Whitson, it's just all this slander about Ed Whitson. No, Ed Whitson stunk. Now, people took it a little too far with Ed Whitson. If you don't know the stories, people were chasing him across the George Washington Bridge because he was terrible. But, you know, you got to call it as it is. And last year, Gary Sanchez was downright brutal. He was as rough to watch as any regular player I think I can ever remember watching on the Yankees. Like, not just the guy who came up and struggled for a bit here or there. I mean, he was terrible for the whole time.
He was. He didn't give you much to cheer about last year.
No.
He really
And every
didn't.
Time you kind of had like a little bit of a glimmer of hope, you'd follow it up with an 0-for-10.
without making contact. I mean, it's okay. Listen, everybody goes through slumps. We get that. We understand it. But he went through a slump where he was just striking out. He looked lost. Gordon, he had no sense of what the strikeout zone, his strike zone was. And he's swinging at everything. And then for the fast, he couldn't come around on the fastball. I mean, Gordon, if you can't hit the fastball, you can't stay in the major leagues.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. If you can't hit the fastball, you're done. And last year, I'm just trying to look at, he played 49
games.
Don't do it to yourself. 64 strikeouts. He had 23 hits. He had 23 hits in the entire year. 10 of them were home runs, but he had 23 hits. I mean, that's terrible. It's just no other way to put it. And you know what? I don't like to buy into body language. I like to just look at what the performance is. But his body language sometimes is as bad as you could, you know, I don't know what the body language metrics are in the Yankee front office, but whatever they are, they're horrendous.
The thing that really got me all the time was at least he didn't do this much last year. When the ball got past him, he's like, oh, wait a minute. Well, should I go get the ball?
Oh, my. That was 2 years ago, right? That was against Tampa, right? Yeah, that was against Tampa. Yep.
You know, the ball's not like the ball's going anywhere. It'll be there when I get there. It was just like, oh, come on, Gary. You can be better than that.
I don't know. I'm sure that there were blips with his defense last year as well. I don't feel like it was as bad as 2018. No. 2018, it was everything. It was defense. It was offense. It was effort. It was injuries. It was everything. Last year, it was just the offense. But the offense, I mean, that's the reason why he's the catcher, right? I mean, like, nobody's expecting Johnny Bench behind the plate, but you got to put up some production. And you thought, you know, 2019, he had like 30-something home runs. So what do you have, 34 home runs in 2019. So you thought, okay, 2018 was just a blip. It was a bad year. But it also kind of – I think part of the reason why it's not just the production, it's the sense that – that the Yankees almost kind of baby him in a way. And they take him with such kid gloves, and people just get very frustrated with that when you don't produce.
Yeah, listen, he didn't help Girardi keep his job.
No.
I'll tell you that. He did not help him at all. This is going to be fun going when the baseball season starts, because obviously we'll be on following games, so you'll be able to get your audio from the Mets and Yankees right here. You'll be able to discuss the games, what drove you crazy, what didn't drive you crazy, what the manager should have done, all that stuff. So Gordon and I are going to have fun. You know, Gordon's the Yankee guy. I'm a Met guy, so we're going to have a lot of fun talking baseball this year here on the show. Hardesty and Damer till midnight on 98.7 ESPN, 1-800-919-3776. We'll get to the calls in a second. So, as we, you know, as we do, we have our pregame meetings every day. Sometimes we do it visually. We have our little Zoom action, and other times we just chit-chat and whatnot. So, as we're going through things for the show, Gordon says about Golden Tate was released by the Giants. And a cost-cutting move, which, you know, you'd expect. I mean, he got a four-year, $37 million deal, something like that. So they cut him 2 years into 2 years into the deal. So he and David Mayo were, you know, told goodbye. And Gordon said,
I said, I kind of thought that had already happened. I kind of forgot he was still on the team. Right? Like, he just kind of... It's such a foregone
conclusion. What took him so long?
Right? I just kind of figured I missed that one, like, immediately following the season.
It was great because you know, we both got caught. I was like, yeah, you're right. I thought he was gone.
Right.
I was sitting there like, you mean he's still there? What took him so long?
After the benching, he came back and then he got hurt. And I just kind of assumed that, oh, yeah, that was already taking, like the scene in Office Space where the guy is still on the still working there. He's still drawing a paycheck, but he was actually fired months ago. You know,
exactly.
I mean, out of all the moves Gettleman made. When you talk about all the terrible moves that has been made in his tenure, that one has to be, that's high up there.
It is. I mean, first of all, and listen, we understand that Odell Beckham Jr. was a lightning rod for the Giants. We get it. But you can't send him away and bring back Golden Tate.
Well, not if you're talking about
him.
Culture, right? Like
right.
You're talking about, well, this move was made to improve the culture. The guy gets suspended for PEDs right off the bat. He gets benched for complaining about his role on the team when he's finally starting to be productive.
Yep.
And then he had the fight with Jalen Ramsey as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, that was quite – the 30 for 30 on Golden Tate's career with the Giants is going to be a hoot, man. That's going to be fun.
That's going to be a 10 for 10.
Yeah. And he had a very good career. He was a very good slot receiver.
Oh, there's no question.
But it always kind of felt like a panic move with the Giants after, you know, making the move with Beckham, and then they brought him in here, and it was like, at the time, it was a weird move. And sometimes you make those weird moves, and you get to see it, and it turns out to be far better. This was not one of those.
No, this wasn't it. And listen, you know, they have to cut money because they have to re-sign Leonard Williams, right? They have to sign him, Gordon.
They have to. You would think that after, you know, to go out on the limb and make the trade that you made and for it to pay off the way it did, he is going to cash in. And, you know, the reason why they weren't able to work out a long-term deal last, you know, they had to bring him back. They bring him back on the franchise tag with cap space being so short for just about everybody now, it seems difficult that you would be able to do that again to make sure he doesn't leave. So you want to get a long-term deal worked out, but it's going to be expensive, right? He's probably looking at the estimates I've seen about $20 million a year. So that's what young, productive defensive linemen who get after the quarterback and sack the quarterback like he did last year, that's what you're going to get.
And you hope, if you're a Giant fan, it wasn't just 1 year because he was in
there. There is that, right? Is it the case of he's in a new spot and they know how to use him?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it the fact that he knew that he, you know, it wasn't a surprise that his contract was up. He knew it the entire time and he was able to produce. So
Or it could be a combination of both, Gordon.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it could be the type of thing where next year he doesn't have 11.5 sacks, but he's still as productive a player in terms of rushing the quarterback and being unleashed that way. So, look, if that's the case, you don't mind spending the money. But, Giants have – and I saw the tweet by Diana Rossini, who was talking to some NFL head coach. She said that and he said to her, next week, in terms of cuts around the league, it's just – I think the term she used was – or he used was it's going to be a bloodbath or it's going to be a massacre with the amount of people getting released by teams as teams – you know, I think there's only – like, is it 20 teams that are over the projected cap right now?
Yeah.
And it's a high number. It's a very high number. You know, the Jets being as having as much space as they have, I think that there's only like 5 or 6 teams that have more space than them. So they're in a good spot. But everybody else, woof, might be some tough decisions to be made.
You said like they're like 80 million. They got 80 million available for salary. It's like, what?
Well,
they're not paying anybody.
And why is that, Larry?
Because they don't have
people
there.
Right? Quarterback's not making
talent.
Any money yet, right? And they don't have a, you know, Livion's not here anymore.
Yeah.
You know? So CJ Mosley's back, so he's making some money. But
he's making some dough.
They don't have a lot of talented players that are making a lot of money.
That's right. Let's go to the phones.
Do they have anybody who is on a second contract, like that they drafted even?
No,
probably
Marcus
not,
May.
Right?
Marcus May.
Right. Well,
he's trying
May
to get
be,
one.
Right, yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe. Right.
Listen to his agent. His agent doesn't think so.
It, yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah. Well, come on. Look. When is an agent happy in negotiations?
Of course, right. It is immediately following the contract being worked out. And only
maybe
shortly after that.
Yeah. Maybe they're happy then.
Yeah.
1-800-919-3776. Brian in West Palm Beach. Start us off on ESPN New York tonight.
Hello.
Brian,
can you hear me?
I can.
Gordon?
Yeah, Brian.
Oh, how you doing?
I'm good, man.
Diana Rossini's cousins, I've known. I grew up in Westbury on Long Island. And if you ever talk to him, tell her that Brian called from West Palm, and I grew up with her cousins, the Rossinis. They went to Holy Trinity High School in Hicksville.
Okay. Do we have something a little bit more pertinent for the show here, Brian, rather than...
No, I understand. I just wanted to tell you, when you hit Rossini, and I've known them my whole life since I was like 6 years old.
Gotcha.
If you're the Giants, I'm a big Yankee fan, Gordon. I went to Florida State. I played for Dick Howes, who managed the Yankees and the Kansas City Royals. So,
you did?
If you're the... Yeah. I played second base at FSU.
Okay.
If you're the Giants and... I read all the New York papers. I grew up in Westbury. I read all the New York papers. I would go after the tight end from the University of Florida, Pitts. But
everybody loves Kyle Pitts.
He's a great player because he is a great player. I watch every game.
No, look, I mean, the only problem with that, Brian, is that I don't think he's going to last to 11.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
The problem with Gettleman is he's not going to move up, I don't think. I don't look at him as somebody who's going to, you know, to move up, to get from 11, I don't know where Pitts is going to go. It seems like he's going to, you know, you think that the quarterbacks will probably go 1, 2, 3 or be gone by 5. Sewell will be gone by 5. Pitts is probably going to be in the top 6, 7 picks. So you're going to have to move up 4 or 5 spots if you're the Giants to go get him. I don't think they're going to do that.
Listen, if you believe Mel Kiper Jr., the Jets are taking him.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's what Mel had. I don't know that he's going to go that early at 4, but at this point, I would be less surprised if he went that early than lasting to 11. Let's put it that way. With the way it seems like the buzz is, swirling around him.
Yeah.
I mean, have we talked about – I don't even think we've talked about Trevor Lawrence. I don't think we've had as many calls on Zach Wilson as we've had than we have on Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, no, I don't think we have. No.
If we were doing a word cloud of just the NFL draft, Kyle Pitts' name would be the largest name in the word cloud.
It would be. There's no question about it. It would be. Send to San Antonio and talk to Sam. Sam, you're next on 98.7.
What's going on, gentlemen? How you doing? I hope all is well. How you doing, Larry and Gordon?
What's going on, man?
I know I told you the screener. I wanted to ask you guys just about your Mets prediction, but you guys asked your March Madness. I thought of a couple of shows. The Jefferson's got to be on there. The Knight Rider, of course, and the one that it was. I don't even know how long the show lasted, but if you remember that show, Airwolf. It was a show about a helicopter. Or something like that.
Is that J. Michael Vincent?
That's it. Look at you.
I remember Airwolf.
Yeah.
It did have a good theme song.
It came on USA, I think, in its infancy. Instead of talking about the Mets, Larry, you and I always do talk about the Mets. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to have a good year. My buddies were having a conversation, you know, how you have with your friends about the best this, that. My question to you guys, I want to know your personal opinion. Take resume and everything out of the equation. For each of the sports, baseball, basketball, football, in football we kept it to quarterbacks. What were the best on-field talent that you guys saw in your lifetime? I'm an 80s child, so mine was Steve Young, Ken Griffey for baseball, and basketball is Hakeem Olajuwon. So I'm just interested to see what you guys' answer to that is.
That's good, Sam.
Well, thank you, Larry. You know I'm always going to get you thinking, my brother.
Yeah, you do. You do. I'm going to have to say for me, if I go, let me stay where you are in the 80s. I would say MJ. I got to go MJ. A little over Hakeem. I love Hakeem. Plus I'm a little angry with him because he beat my Knicks. But I got to go. Yeah, so I got to go MJ basketball. I got to go. You know what? It's hard for me not to say. I've a lot of respect for Steve Young, great quarterback. Gordon's gonna love this. I got to say Marino. I mean, for what he was able to do with the quick release and getting the ball up and down the field like that.
You know, if I may just kind of retort that, Dan Marino was definitely part of our answers within the group. I particularly go with Steve Young because, to me, he is the best dual-threat quarterback when it comes to both aspects. Mm-hmm. The guy could throw the ball, and he could run, not like a Lamar Jackson, but he was definitely one of the more elite running quarterbacks, and he can throw with the best of them as well. That's why I went with
Absolutely.
Him.
Absolutely. No, I got you. And I guess Junior Griffey was tremendous. Griffey, Bonds?
I would say if I had a first pick – Now, look, you can question how he did it, right? I think we all kind of know how he did it.
Yep.
There is nobody who dominated their sport the way that Barry Bonds dominated his. I don't care if it's MJ. I don't care if it's Marino. You could not pitch to him. I'm trying to pull it up now.
If I could just interject in a moment, I'm not disagreeing with you at all, Gordon.
Right.
The other person that Griffey Jr. to me just barely topped him out. Mike Trout is the other name for me.
Trout's amazing. First ballot.
Dominant player in every aspect.
Griffey, unbelievable talent, not taking anything away from. Although Griffey's career, I think people are kind of forgetting how, you know, Griffey's career by the age of 32 really was not the same as before 32. Bonds in a year was walked 232 times. In that year, he hit 45 home runs. So that tells you if you threw the ball near the plate, he was going to hit a home run, and everybody just decided not to throw the ball near the plate. I have to pull up. Larry, there's a stat that is the most mind-boggling. I got to find the right numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But in a season, I think Barry Bonds was walked like intentionally walked 100. Oh, that's what it is. He was walked intentionally 120 times. The next highest total is like 40.
Yeah.
And it was like Willie McCovey was walked intentionally. I got to find Willie McCovey's numbers, but that's the difference. 120 times he was intentionally walked. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he won the MVP, his fourth in a row. I mean, there's no, look, we can all say how he did it, right? We all think we know, and I think so too. But there's nobody who dominated the way he dominated and did so, I think, was he 40? No, he was 39. So.
Yeah, yeah. And remember how great he was even before we were wondering what he's doing.
He was a first ballot Hall of Famer before he left Pittsburgh. So
he's a 5-tool player.
Yeah, absolutely. No,
you know, he was a 5-tool player. He was tremendous.
Yeah,
I love Junior Griffey, who was a great player too.
Great player, great, and maybe the prettiest swing, right?
If you're gonna,
they've been talking about the NBA logo and making it Kobe. If you were to reimagine the baseball logo, if it were to be Ken Griffey Jr.'s swing, I don't think anybody would complain.
You're right.
But just in terms of dominance, just what he did on the field, not how he did it, what he did, nobody has ever dominated a sport like Barry Bonds did.
Never did.
At least in my, we're talking about the people that we have seen.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is running for second place.
Yep. And for me, watching when I was younger, watching Joe Namath, who, by the way, was the last quarterback the Jets had to throw for 4,000 yards in the season. He was the first to do it and the last to do it for them.
But they don't need Deshaun Watson, just so you know. It's giving up too much, Larry. You don't want to overpay.
But Marino was like Namath for me. The quick release, being able to throw the ball down the field like that. I mean, he was, I don't have to tell you, he was tremendous. I loved him. I loved him.
Yeah, well, when he set the touchdown record of 48, the old record, I think, was 34.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're talking about, that would be like somebody setting, I think the record now is 55. That would be like somebody jumping it up to 70.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that tells you what dominant level he was playing at.
Unbelievable. Gordon, you know, I've been getting some interesting comments on our theme show bracket that's coming up in the next couple of days.
Yes. And look, unfortunately, the field just keeps expanding, right?
I know.
Like sometimes you get to this part, it's about whittling it down, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think I have at last check, I think it's about 90 different shows from things that I've researched to what people have brought up. And I have to be honest, there's been an outlier or two. And I would just have to say this. Mm-hmm. This is not about a theme song that you liked.
Right.
This is about finding what's the greatest one of all time. So look, there's a lot of them that are good, right? Like somebody brought up Airwolf before, right? Airwolf, good theme song. Is that going to win the thing? No.
No.
And this field, to get it down to 64, there's going to be blood, Larry. I'm just telling you right now, there is going to be violence in the streets because it's going to be some very good theme songs are going to be left on the sidelines. I'll tell you that right now. So that's why I would tell people, tweet us, get your votes in, get one that you really like. I would say pick three. Don't go and list 25 because then it becomes too difficult. But if you give me three, it will be factored in the field of 64, which will be released a week from Monday.
Somebody tweeted to us, Gordon, The Avengers, and I'm not talking about the DC Comics.
Yeah, I don't remember. Is that from the 60s? I don't remember the Avengers TV show. I'll have to go back and listen to that one. I went back and I did listen to Beretta again from Bruce the other night. So that's one that is on the sheet. I don't know if it makes the field or not, but very difficult. The 70s are jam-packed, and I got to be honest.
We're good. No, we're good.
The 2000s and beyond, because that's kind of the 60s as well as the more recent shows, that is going to be just jam-packed. I mean, it's just going to be a battle. You don't even need seeds. Everybody's going to be a number one seed, basically.
Oh, okay. I got you. I got you. But, you know, that person that I think that was Crazy Feline 1, you need to let us know which Avengers, because if I remember correctly, having watched, you know, I watched it this in not when it originally came out, but in the mid 70s. There were two Avengers. There was two Avenger themes because there were two Avenger, the ladies. In, the Avengers was a British TV series, Gordon, where there was a man and a woman that were detectives.
Okay.
They worked for like kind of like the British Secret Service.
In the 70s, everybody's a detective, right?
Exactly. So true. But this was, and this was in the 60s, but you know, it carried over. And one was Diana Rigg was the,
Okay.
Was the first, she wasn't really the first one because here's what happens with me. When you watch these TV shows and you see them later, you start to go back and, I want to see when this first started. Who was like in the first episode? That's me. And so when I went back to the first episode, there was somebody totally different. But when you think about the Avengers, you think about Diana Rigg.
Years. Okay.
Yeah, the prime years were Diana Rigg. And then when she left the show, another actress named Linda Thorson took over. When Linda Thorson took over, they changed the theme.
Okay.
Okay. So the first Avengers theme, I think, is better than the second Avengers theme. But we'll see what Crazy Feline One has to say about that. And when you listen to him, Gordon, you'll know what I'm saying.
Okay.
When you check him out,
I'll take a listen. And I think that was the same person that brought up the Underdog, the cartoon Underdog. That is one that I did not think of. But then as soon as you think about it, you're like, oh man, that was a pretty good one. There's a lot of cartoon ones that are. Scooby Doo. I mean, who doesn't love the Scooby Doo?
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Listen, and the old Mighty Mouse theme.
Mighty Mouse, right?
Which was like an opera.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So there's a lot of them.
I mean, there's so many of them. Absolutely. It's going to be, look, they're all going to be number one seeds to us. I'll tell you that
now. That's for sure.
To get it down to 64, again, you can tweet us and let us know what you think. It's Hardesty ESPN or at Gordon Damer. Give us three and we'll find out where the battle lines are drawn in about a week or so.
Yep, absolutely. Let's head back to the phones. Tommy's in Connecticut. Hey, Tommy, you're next on 98.7.
Hey, Larry and Gordon. First time, long time, and I just wanted to chime in on the baseball side of the most dominant player that I think I've ever seen, and that has to be Mariano Rivera. I mean, that guy just lights out, man. And he had one pitch. And as a Met fan, it was just killing me to watch him do it while we had to trot Armando Benitez out there.
Well, look, in terms of closers, Tommy, we could live to all be 100 years old. It'll be very hard to envision seeing someone better than Mariano. And keep in mind, Mariano, he pitched until he was 43, and there's no question he could have pitched longer.
Yes, he would.
I don't see anybody ever doing that again. I mean, I would be hard-pressed to imagine somebody being able to accomplish that.
I agree with you, Tommy. Thanks for the phone call. And as you mentioned, Gordon, dominant all the time.
Yes.
I mean, except that little hitch he had with the Red Sox.
Well, the greatest stat that I've, or I guess it's just a fact, but the greatest fact that I've ever heard is that more people have walked on the moon than have scored runs against Mariano Rivera in the postseason. I mean, I don't know if that's on the Hall of Fame plaque. It should be.
Isn't that scary? And just think. And that includes the fact that he had the unfortunate situation against Arizona, the D-backs.
Right. Yeah, he had the Arizona one. He had the one in 97 against the Indians when Sandy Alomar took him deep. So
yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it's very, very – he was lights out anytime you saw him. I mean, he was great regular season, postseason.
He was even better.
Yes. Yeah, you know what? He was. He was better in the postseason, right. He was this ridiculous all-time saves leader during the regular season. And then when he got to the postseason, he was even better.
And that's why you remember him so much, Gordon, because you know my theory. It's what you do when the light shines brightest, when the pressure's really on. And listen, he had, like, you go back, not that we have to chronicle how, prove to people how great Mariano was, but you go back to the championship series against Boston when Aaron Boone hit the home run. What did he pitch, like three innings, four innings?
Right, yeah. He was one of the reasons why they were able to keep that game close, right? His postseason ERA, and keep in mind, he was in the postseason basically every single year.
Yeah.
His postseason ERA in 32 series was 0.70.
It's incredible.
It's
incredible.
I don't know how you get it any better than that.
It's incredible. He was like LeBron. Like LeBron's always in the finals.
Yes. Yes.
That was Mariano.
In the postseason every,
always
I mean, basically it. Every single year.
Always in the. You imagine, and just remember, John Wetland's
was the only one who
used. Yeah, remember John Wetland started this thing in '96, mm-hmm. and after that, they're like, "No, we're good. We got Mariano now.
Right,
we,
yeah.
See ya."
And I remember thinking after '96, because I'm the contrarian, thinking to myself, "Well, why we? Well, you know, look, I'm not saying that Mariano's not great, but why not keep this 1-2 punch together?" Well, look, obviously they made the right call there because Mariano. I mean, he was incredible. He was incredible, and he was in. You know, it seems like closers, they might be dominant, but they're dominant for short periods of time.
Yeah, yeah.
He was dominant from the age of, I don't know, what is he, 26, 27, when he really took hold, and he was dominant all the way to the end.
Nothing says domination in baseball for a pitcher is that you know what's coming and still can't hit it.
Yeah.
And listen, no cell phones, no banging on drums, none of that. You knew, everybody knew what was coming and still couldn't hit it. Still couldn't hit it.
Yep. He was incredible. And I always love like OPS plus or ERA plus. And you know, the baseline is 100, right? So if you're a league average, you're 100, anything above that. He had a year, 2005, his ERA plus was 308.
Oh.
It was 308. His, and incredible. His lifetime ERA plus is the highest in baseball, 205. So, I mean, look, in terms of dominance, he was the, it's almost annoying when you hear other closers get brought up in the conversation. Like, you know, Trevor Hoffman was a good closer,
please.
But he was he was good, but he was nowhere close. I'm sorry to Mariano Rivera.
He was awful in the postseason.
Oh, awful in the postseason. I mean, the Yankees. You know,
when they got there
in '98, he had other blips in the postseason as well. So, Mariano was very few. We could live to be 100. I don't think we'll ever see anybody as dominant as him.
Not at all. Bruce is in Flushing. Hey, Bruce, you're next on 98.7.
Hey, guys. I want to talk about the Yankees. But before that, on the March Madness, you know, I was thinking last night after I got off the phone the other day with you guys. You're dissing the 60s by not putting the 60s in. So I thought, because I don't want to put too much work on you guys, you should appoint an advisory committee from the callers, and we can go through the 60s. I mean, listen, Bonanza. When you heard Bonanza...
Bruce, the 60s will be included. It will just be included in the same section, the same 16-portion section as the 2000s and beyond.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so there will be shows from the 60s in there. It just won't be its own. Like, the 70s will have an entire 16-team field all to itself. The 60s will be matched with the 2000s and beyond.
Well, let me throw you a couple of 60 nominations for you.
Okay.
Bonanza's number one.
Yep.
I mean, when you heard that song, you thought you were riding on Ponderosa, on a horse, and just going any place. Mission Impossible.
Of course.
I mean, how can you forget Mission Impossible?
You're right.
Rawhide. Keep them doggies moving.
Yep.
Rawhide.
I remember that more from the Blues Brothers rendition during the movie than I do the actual show. But no, it's anytime you do any research on like 60 shows, that's another one that comes up. Bonanza always comes up. There's a lot of them from the 60s. You know, I think it was something that they focused on a lot more back then than they do now.
Yeah, and one of my favorite, because I have a personal story with this, because a few years ago when I was in a hospital and I had to go for some tests, I'm in a wheelchair, and the attendant is rolling me for a test, and in my head I'm hearing the Ironside music, dun 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 dun, and I said, "Do you remember Ironside?" And the guy looked at me like I was crazy. Anyway, wow. And by the way, if for a cartoon tune, look up Gigantor.
Gigantor. That does not
Gigantor was a robot that a kid built who was like 6 feet tall. And I'll give you the quick version. Gigantor, the space age robot, he's at your command. Gigantor, the space age robot, he'll follow it.
We got Bruce and Flushing singing on the air. Take that, all the other shows on the station.
That's right. We got it.
Well, quick Yankee point. You know who's making a name for himself? I know it's only a couple of games. This kid, Dietrich, he can play any infield position except for shortstop. He can play outfield position, first base. He's a left-handed hitter. I would not be surprised if he replaces Taylor Wade on the bench.
Hmm. Interesting. Interesting, Bruce.
Who would be
the
backup
call.
Shortstop? Sorry, Bruce. We got. I'm trying to think of the roster right now. Who else would be able to play shortstop in that space then? If he makes the team, I got to take a look at it.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's an obvious name that I'm just forgetting, but
yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah,
but I think Wade is still going to be there. I just do.
You know, as a Yankee fan, it kind of feels like the Gardner thing, right? Like they just keep trying to make it happen. And mm-hmm. they talk about every year it seems like you get to a certain part of spring, and it's like this is when Tyler Wade is going to make, he always hits in the spring, but can he carry it over to the regular season? And it just never does.
Yeah, and his defense is what ends up keeping him a spot there. And, you know, the fact that you can put him in any position, so his versatility helps him out.
Mm-hmm.
In the big
I guess
way.
Maybe Estrada is another guy they have, right? They have Estrada that they could maybe use him. So I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. But no, Bruce is right. You have seen a lot about. It seems like he certainly hits the ball hard too. And you know how like the Yankees like the exit velo, Larry.
Oh yeah, that's big for them. And listen, whatever happens with him, the bottom line is if he's hitting and wait, hey, guess what? We love you, but you better produce. Because we got somebody, we'll move you into that spot. If he can do anything at shortstop, you know, they're going to move him, clearly. They'll add him in.
And look, I mean, I don't know if it's going to be the type of thing where they just look at Gleyber as he's the shortstop every single day, but given the defensive questions, right? Like, mm-hmm. is it possible he's a guy that maybe you pull late in some games to get a defensive replacement in there, given how much of an issue it was last year?
Come on, Gordon. You know sabermetrics. Glaber's going to miss the third game of the season because it's a rest game.
You know what? He's exhausted. He's played two in a row. He's 24 years old. He is just so tired. We need to get him out of the lineup immediately. He is exhausted.
Your calls are next. Plus, we'll turn our attention to the Jets. Joe Douglas made a statement today that told Gordon and I, you might have a new quarterback in green and white this year. Speaking of, do we know what we're dealing with? Joe Douglas.
Yeah, that's a segue.
Spoke to the media today along with Robert Saleh, the new head coach. And obviously, everybody wanted to know what's going on with Sam Darnold. So, Joe, what's up with Darnold?
Our stance on Sam hasn't changed. He's an extremely talented player, very smart, very tough. We have no doubt that Sam is going to achieve his outstanding potential. Obviously, we're in the process of gaining as much information as we can leading up through free agency and the draft, but our stance on Sam has not changed.
Okay, so does that mean that if somebody calls and asks about the trade, you're not interested?
I will answer the call if it's made. As it pertains to Sam, I mean, like I said, Sam's a dynamic player in this league with unbelievable talent and who's really, really has a chance to really hit his outstanding potential moving forward. But like I said earlier, if calls are made, I will answer them.
Unlike the Texans, who aren't answering calls about Deshaun Watson, who wants to leave. So
he's the one placing the calls.
I know he is. How do you read this, Gordon?
Well, the way I read it when I heard it was that, if you're willing to admit that you're willing to take calls, that tells me you have doubts, that you don't know that this is the guy. Like, think about the teams that know they have the quarterback. And this offseason, the Jets have a lot of stuff to do. They got a lot of questions to answer. They got to build the roster. They got to do a ton of things. Not saying that the quarterback is the only thing, but that's the most important thing. You're never in your life, you hope, as a Jet fan, going to have this many options available to you to find the guy that you are going to sink or swim with for the next 5 to 10 years. This is the year to figure it out. And the fact that you're willing to admit that you would take calls tells me that you have doubts. Now, they might not be screaming from the rooftops, but you have some doubts that this is the right guy, and you've had him now for 3 years and you still have doubts.
Here's the things that hurt Darnold. A, he's not Douglas's choice at quarterback.
Absolutely.
B, he's not Salah's choice at quarterback.
Right.
C, he's going into the fourth year where they have to make a decision on paying him $25 million plus in the fifth year of his deal. these things work against him, Gordon. I mean, he just hasn't shown you enough to say. Right now, you would have to say he is not a $30 million a year quarterback. Not even close.
No.
And some of whether it's, and I'm not even talking about, you know, what he's had around him and all the other stuff. I'm just talking about his availability. He hasn't been available. He's been hurt every year. So these are the things that, okay, we give him an asterisk with the mono in the second year, but he still wasn't available. So all these things come into play, and if and this makes you not sure. And he would have to be overwhelming when he did play for you to say, you know what? Yeah, he's had some injury issues, but you know what? When he was out there, he really made a difference. He really did some things. The things that were in his control, he did. And he didn't do that, Gordon. So, you know, really, and I get Joe Douglas, you know, downplaying the situation. Well, we don't really know. Well, I'm not going to really talk about the. I understand he's on somebody else's team. So you really can't talk that much about Deshaun Watson. I get that. But listen, I'm with you. If he says we're listening to trade, to calls about a possible trade, then, yeah, he's willing to move him, whether he wants to go long-term with even – if anything, it says to me, we'll move him because it gives us more draft choices because guess what? If I do have to trade for Deshaun Watson, I'll use the draft choices because I still believe in my heart that you build a team through the draft. If I can trade him and get a couple of more draft choices, that's what I'm going to do because I may have to give up more to get my real quarterback.
Yeah, and look, it, you know, people can spin it, well, you know, he's a player on the team. It's just a good philosophy to take all the calls. I think that that was something that people brought up when it was Jamal Adams' turn. Mm-hmm. But back then, Joe Douglas said that he does believe in untouchable players, and specifically when you're talking about a franchise quarterback. When you have a franchise quarterback, that's an untouchable player. So either something has changed or he's just basically admitting that they don't know that they have the guy.
Gordon, here's what they do know. Sam Darnold is not an untouchable player.
Right, of course. And here's the thing, you know, like taking the calls, like it's like forget about the Chiefs, right? Mahomes, they're not taking a call on
no.
Or the Mm-mm. Bills with Josh Allen.
No.
Do you think the Giants would take a call about Daniel Jones?
If it now,
I'm not saying whether or not he is or is not a franchise quarterback. That's not the
right,
question. Do you think the Giants think that Daniel Jones is a franchise quarterback? Because I do. I think that they think that they got their guy. They're not looking for a new guy. They got their guy.
Yeah. You're right. They're not taking calls. They're good.
You know, and even if they had the second pick in the draft, they wouldn't be taking calls on Daniel Jones. They'd be looking to draft another running back.
To back up.
Right. To back up. Saquon misses some time. You know, we have another guy here. Can't have enough good backs.
No, absolutely not. You know, especially ones that come out of the backfield because we don't have any sure-handed tight ends.
No.
Yet.
No, not yet. Kyle Pitts, come on down.
That's it. Absolutely.
You're listening to the best of ESPN New York Tonight.